I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
All right. Good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. This is a safe space for independent thinkers out there or those who aspire to be. Today, we're going to have Stephen and Cade come in from Americans for Prosperity. Still weird to say the name Cade. That's my son's name. It is not my son, however. But they'll be coming in. We'll discuss some state issues. I've got some national issues to look at with them as far as Americans for Prosperity. This is the group that has been lobbying our state legislature to try to get us more economic freedoms, more personal freedoms here in Mississippi. So I'm a big fan of Americans for Prosperity. So we'll have them in, as we have for Thursdays for several months now. We'll crank up today with my quotes of the day today. I absolutely love this one. You know, I'm very aware of kind of how radical I come off to people. Sometimes I can see it in their face when I get into conversations with people. I mean, I don't really mince words, and I'm not really interested in just getting a little bit of freedom back. You know, I mean, I'm out there, and surprised more people aren't. I think a lot of people want to stay within the acceptable, respectable bounds of political discourse. No, I think there should be zero taxation. We should end the war on drugs. We should end the wars overseas. There's no equivocation there. It's not that we should just draw down troops a little bit. It's not that we should just decriminalize marijuana. It's that we need to undo the horrible things we've done. But I know I'm a radical, so occasionally I run across a quote of somebody of a like mind. And this is the quote from Ian Smith. He was the gym owner in New Jersey who refused to shut down his gym in New Jersey. I believe this is the same guy last I had seen. He had racked up something like hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe over $1 million in fines from the state of New Jersey, yet he remained undeterred. I have been very sorry that I did not own a physical business with a storefront, that I could have done exactly the same thing, because I assure you I would have done it. But this is a man who obviously will actually fight for his freedom, not sit around and just talk about it and blame the other side for the problems. Anyway, this is what Ian Smith, the New Jersey gym owner, said. He said, "Everything the government is doing right now is designed to make you fat, weak, stupid, depressed, lazy, and reliant on crumbs they wipe off their plates. Health replaced by pharmaceuticals, education replaced by programming, hard work replaced by handouts. These people hate you." That's Ian Smith, a man who has already put his livelihood where his mouth is, New Jersey gym owner, and he's exactly right. Another quote of the day, Herbert Hoover said, "We are now..." This is Herbert Hoover. When was he president? This is back in the 20s? 1920s. Oh, we've had 100 years of this quote has aged, and yet we apparently have learned nothing. Herbert Hoover said, "We are now speeding down the road of wasteful spending and debt, and unless we can escape, we will be smashed in inflation." And you will find out exactly what he means in the coming years, I believe, as we are currently speeding down the road of wasteful spending and debt. And we will also be smashed into inflation. There is a financial guy, trader, that I really like. His name is Sven Henrich, H-E-N-R-I-C-H, Sven Henrich. And he does got a site called Northman Trader. Smart guy, but he has a new motto for the Federal Reserve. He says, "First we took your savings income, then we made rich, filthy rich, and housing unaffordable for many, and now we'll finish off the bottom 50% with inflation we don't count, and we'll make millions with speaking engagements. I've commented that Janet Yellen left the Federal Reserve and got $7 million in speaking engagements before she returns now as our Treasury Secretary. I'm sure she's going to be very tough on those institutions that paid her $7 million for a speech. But this quote, and the beginning of it is, again, this is Sven Henrich. He said, first we took your savings income. And I did a quick look because, you know, I think I say this every time, and maybe I shouldn't. You know, I played a clip the other day where Bill Maher talked about the Federal Reserve, and I thought, well, maybe talking about the Fed is going to become cool someday. I've been talking about it for 4 years here. Most people don't want to hear it. They think it's dry. It's boring. They don't understand how it affects them. So I thought I'd look at what U.S. savings rates have been. Are you a saver? Do you keep any money in a savings account? Are you a senior citizen who relies on what you need to be safe, reliable, steady income-producing investments in your senior years because you can't afford a stock market wipeout? Have you done any kind of savings whatsoever? Let me tell you what the rates have looked like. Now, this is actually charting, I believe this is the 10-year treasury. This is a 30-year treasury. This is what's happened, and a lot of people probably don't understand this. If you're younger, even, and when I say young, I'm talking about in your 30s, maybe in your 40s, and you've never really even paid attention. Nobody wants to know. It's not compelling radio to tell you what the 30-year treasury rate is. Who cares about that, Mike? Well, you should, because these are the same kinds of rates that your savings accounts are based on. Anything that you put money into as a stable investment, not speculating in crypto or the stock market or even real estate, but if you just want to sock away a little bit of money and have that money do a little bit of work for you while it sits somewhere safe, it concerns you. And just some historical perspective, which is just quite amazing. This chart, when they first started issuing the 30, was somewhere in the 1970s. It came out at about 8%. Now, we saw the inflation of the late 1970s, early 80s, which you're going to see again. For those of you that don't remember the 70s and the stagflation of the 70s, don't worry, it's coming around. We're about to get a heaping taste of it. But in the 1970s, 30-year started at around 8%. It actually went up to, looks like its peak was somewhere around almost 14%, 13.95%. Now, the reason I bring this up is not to mention the 30-year Treasury yield, but the fact that people could buy CDs yielding 10%, 11%. Let's fast forward that to, let's see, how about when we get to 1990? It took a pretty steady trip down from this 14%. Now at 1990, it was about 8%. So savings accounts were still paying you, 5 or 6%. It doesn't track the 30-year exact. It's always a little bit lower than some of these bond yields. But it was about 8% in 1990. So if you wanted to retire in the 90s and put your money away and, put away $1 million, you had $80,000 in income. That was the goal. That was the American dream. Scrimp and save and sacrifice and then take your money and live off of the interest so that you never outlive your money. $80,000 on $1 million. Let's see what happened by the year 2000. We're down to about 5.5%, which meant that your savings account was yielding you somewhere maybe 3-4%. So now your $1 million investment, you're drawing $40,000 off of it. And remember also, as we're going on, obviously the prices of everything is going up. So as your savings rates, what you're earning on your savings is going down, the cost of everything you want to buy is going up. This is really kind of at the root of what I believe is this dissatisfaction, really the hostility, the agitation that's in this country right now. It's just that people can't identify it. They don't really know. They kind of feel like they're getting screwed somehow, but they can't quite figure it out. So that was 2000. Let's take a look at 2012. 2.75 was the yield on the 30-year treasury, which meant you were getting probably around 1% on your savings. Now that $1 million that you save for retirement, you're drawing $10,000 a year off of it. And again, that's after another 12 years of inflation, meaning the price of everything went up. And now we have seen where savings rates are down to around zero. People who retire now and need to protect their wealth and buy stable CDs, bonds, money market accounts, you're getting zero. Meanwhile, the prices of things, if we've seen the inflation just continues to run rampant and is even accelerating. It's really quite a stunning chart if anybody really cares. If you want to know what's happened to America, this is one of the charts you really should look at. And this is not a this is not a free market chart. Interest rates will rise and fall in a free market depending on the demand for debt and what people demand to get on their savings. That's not what this is. This is the Federal Reserve manipulating for 40 years now. 40 years. They've been manipulating interest rates lower and lower and lower, which has crushed the middle class, crushed the savers, crushed the retirees. Meanwhile, fattened the wallets of the biggest corporations who are at the trough of these low interest rates. So when you look at things like globalization, it's not enough to just point to these corporations. It's not even enough to just point at Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. I've got a very creepy, creepy video they've recently put out. I'll do later. But it is to understand that your financial masters here in the United States are responsible for these corporations growing to the size that they can reach their tentacles all the way around the world and drive policy around the world. This is a stunning chart. It's a shame that most people don't understand what it means. I'll be right back.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at DanksMillerCorey.com.
I really love thinkers. I don't necessarily care almost what their political side of the aisle they're on. If they're willing to think for themselves, there's something to work with there for me. Really, the least interesting people to me are the partisan talking points regurgitators. This is the media, most politicians. Those are just uninteresting to me. This is why I don't really care too much for the Sean Hannity show. He says nothing to me that's surprising, nothing really deep. I like Jimmy Dore. I've talked about him often on this show, and the reason I do is because he's a very progressive. He may even describe himself as a socialist, a democratic socialist, whatever that means. I would love to have Jimmy Dore on this show or sit down with him for a couple of beers to discuss some of his economic things, because he's a smart guy. He's very smart. He's very clever. He's a comedian. I think he's dead wrong on those things, but I don't hate him for that because he's a thinker. I mean, and just to tell you, say, oh, you've gone to the radical left listening to these democratic socialists. No, it's not. I listen to him for his truthfulness, particularly when it comes to the media. And just to tell you that this guy is a bit of an ally, I'm about to play a clip from his video. He interviewed Glenn Greenwald the other night, and I listened to a good chunk of it. I'm a big fan of Glenn Greenwald, who is also a liberal guy, but boy, he's one of the last investigative reporters left out there. He's actually a journalist. Here's one of the titles of one of Jimmy Dore's other videos, just so you know where I'm coming from. Rachel Maddow's hilarious self-own while Russia-gating. I mean, Jimmy Dore was all over the ridiculous Russia hoax with Trump. Jimmy Dore's no fan of Donald Trump, but he values honesty over any of these things. And it's also interesting watching. I watch his videos pretty regularly because they're entertaining. And he's a smart guy. Again, I disagree with him on a whole host of things. He is finding out what AOC is. He was a big AOC champion when she first ran for office. And he said the other day, I wish I had the clip, but he said basically, it's always telling when the people that you think are great, when they seeing what they do when they actually get power. And I've talked about this a lot on the right. The Republicans are very strong on spending and very, very big on all kinds of things when they're not in power. It's when they get in power that they expose themselves because they don't do the things that they act like they're going to do. How long did we hear? If you just give us a few more votes, we're going to get Obamacare struck down. There were at least three or four campaign cycles. Obamacare was the main issue of those cycles the Republicans ran with, yet we still find ourselves with Obamacare.
So that's interesting. But this was an interesting clip. This is Glenn Greenwald. He used to go on MSNBC a lot. Again, he's a liberal guy, but he's a true investigative journalist, and the liberal journalist core hate him now. You'll see him often on Tucker Carlson, not because he and Tucker agree on everything, but because Glenn Greenwald will get to the heart of corruption and call it out. And this is why he finds himself ostracized out to, he's basically just an independent journalist now. He was originally with The Guardian. They couldn't stand his truthfulness. He's the one that broke the Edward Snowden story. Then he started The Intercept, and The Intercept became a kind of a mainstream left-wing rag, and they forced one of their liberal founders out, essentially, because they just couldn't stand his truth-telling when it calls out the Democrats. But he used to go on MSNBC, and he's going to tell you a little bit about the mainstream media and exactly what the problem is, why mainstream media like MSNBC and CNN are so vanilla, so uniform in their coverage of everything, right? There's not a CNN person on there that's been challenging Biden during the election. The entire media complex conspired outside basically of Tucker Carlson of covering the Hunter Biden laptop story. And I just thought this was an interesting insight. Again, this is Glenn Greenwald. He used to be on MSNBC a lot, but no longer. And this, he explains why. Just this is kind of a good behind-the-scenes peek at what organizations like MSNBC, and I'm sure this is across the spectrum of all mainstream media.
Well, I'll tell you something really interesting. First of all, you know, I used to be friends with a lot of MSNBC hosts. I don't have any friends who are MSNBC hosts anymore, but I used to have a lot because I used to go on those shows all the time, and that was like my milieu. And so I know a lot about how they work. And one of the things that one of them told me once is that they don't get show-by-show ratings. They get segment-by-segment ratings. And they told me that if they put on somebody who attacks Democrats, you can see the audience plummet. You can see them turning off the TV. And so it's almost like an electric shock therapy where they're trained never to put on any dissidents, anyone criticizing the Democratic Party narrative, because they can lose their jobs. And then in 2011 or 2012, Chris Hayes.
He goes into Chris Hayes basically selling out to MSNBC. Apparently, Chris Hayes used to be a guy who would kind of call out the elites and call out some of the problems, even though he was a left-wing guy. But he got to MSNBC and got completely co-opted. And now he's just part of the MSNBC blob. What's interesting about that is I didn't know that these shows actually get ratings by segment and that they can in real time find out that people are tuning out. And the reason this is of particular interest to me, because I've felt a little bit of that with this show, where I can be hitting some of the things that are consistent with conservatives. You can call out Hillary Clinton. You can call out Nancy Pelosi. You can call out certain things. And then I might transition to a criticism of the Donald Trump administration. And if it is true with the MSNBC viewer who is just cannot hear something that does not conform with their beliefs, you just heard him say that if you get onto MSNBC and start criticizing Joe Biden or the Democratic Party, that people start immediately tuning out because we have become a society of people that cannot accept any views unless we already hold them. We can't take in any contradictory views to take them even into consideration. This is very different about me, and I have to try to adjust that to an audience of radio show listeners. How do you get out new? Do I have to sneak it in? Do I have to say I hate Nancy Pelosi right before I stick in something about how Republicans are screwing you too? But this is the bubble society we live in, where people just run and hide from anything that does not already conform with their worldview. It's very interesting. And I think we see the same thing on COVID, on vaccinations. It does not dissuade me, because I'm going to come right back with some interesting COVID news. And I would imagine those people who have been hysterics for COVID or who are in the religious ritual of the vaccine right now will probably just tune out. They don't want to hear a second opinion. Even for a medical procedure now, people don't want a second opinion from anything except the government-approved talking heads. Unfortunately, you continually get one here from me on a daily basis, like it or not. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB here. And we've got Stephen Utroska and Cade from Americans for Prosperity in with us today. We're going to be discussing some things that are going on in Mississippi with the legislature ended. We kind of found out last week exactly where we landed on all that stuff, but there's always stuff going on. And I wanted to talk about, well, I'll tell you what, maybe I'll do it now. I'm going to read a couple of stories y'all can weigh in. Well, hello. I guess I should say I shouldn't introduce you and then ignore you. So thanks for coming in.
Always good to be here.
They have recently closed a vaccine spot in Colorado after a dozen adverse events. This is interesting to me. Okay, let me bear this out here. So they've closed a vaccination spot in Colorado after about a dozen adverse events, a couple of hospitalizations with this, and they're now instituting some new guidelines. That was with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. They're now issuing new guidelines on the AstraZeneca vaccine. Most places are saying now that is not for under age 30. On Thursday, Prime Minister, this is Australia, Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced that there will be changes to the AstraZeneca vaccine rollout in the country, with those aged under 50 being given an advisory, that's in quotation marks, over links to rare blood clots. This comes as European medicines regulator classified blood clots as a very rare side effect, while the UK will offer an alternative vaccine to those under 30. The reason that I find this so interesting is because doesn't this feel like they're testing it right now? Aren't these the kinds of things that when you generally have a vaccine and you take that 5 to 10 year testing period, you figure these things out on things like mice and ferrets and bunny rabbits, and now they're doing it live right now on human beings?
Yeah, well, the under 50 group, those are the people who are least susceptible to adverse effects from the virus itself.
Exactly. And that's the funniest thing. You know, for people under 50, your immune system was about 99.9% effective against this thing, but they want you to take in a vaccine that is quite obviously an experiment that is 95% effective.
Yeah, I haven't done a ton of research on vaccines. My own children, we gave them vaccines, for a little while, and then we now do not give our children vaccines anymore.
Standard child schedule you're talking
about.
The standard
child schedule for vaccines. You know, the Mississippi, required
totalitarian
schedule. So both my kids got it through at about the 12-month. Regiment that they normally give, and then both my children are very close in age. They're only 13 months apart, but both of them, after that, we decided, look, we're going to homeschool our kids for now. You know, so my wife stays at home, so they're not in daycare, so we're not mandated by law anymore to do that
yet.
So we have backed away from vaccines, for my own children, and I'm certainly personally not going to get the COVID vaccine. I'm not sure that I see the benefit in that for my age group and my health. It just blows my mind that people my age have such a adverse reaction chance in getting this vaccine, but they are lining up to get it.
Yes.
When the chance of you actually having adverse effects from the virus is so low.
Well, I looked at the numbers the other day. Worldwide, let me make sure I get my numbers right. Worldwide, I believe 0.4% of the world
has actually tested positive for COVID. 0.4% of those, I think it's 0.01% have died. And I tell you what, it's a little bit higher than that that got it. It's 0.4% that got really ill from it, and 0.01% of people who died from it. So our plan is to mass inoculate 7 billion people, or as close to it as they can get, for the 0.01% of people who died from this thing. And it would be one thing if humans were typically immune to death. You know, death wasn't usually a thing. But obviously quite a more number of people. I think it's, I can't remember what the number was, 54. No, that's not going to be right. It's obviously tens of millions of people die every year from all kinds of things. But this 0.01%, we're going to inoculate. And this is a, Thomas Dobbs the other day said, in one of his press conferences, this Johnson & Johnson vaccine, they've studied it more than most any other vaccine. I don't know how you can say that when most vaccines are run through trials for 5 to 10 years. How's that? I mean, how is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know. And I'll tell anybody, next time you go to get vaccines for yourself or your children, whether it's this, you know, the COVID vaccine or anything else, ask to see the insert.
Yeah.
And look at it. And there's, I mean, tons of heavy metals, tons of everything else. You know, people don't use, you know, regular deodorant anymore because it's got aluminum in it, you know, but you're about to inject mercury and all kind of other heavy metals in your body through a vaccine.
Well, it's
I'm
always
very suspect of that.
It's been fascinating to me because when you have kids, you know what you do when you have kids. You don't let them onto a bike or a skateboard without a helmet and knee pads. And we get our car seats put in by the fire department to make sure they're right. If they, you know, some people tether them to themselves in the grocery store because they don't want to let them out of their sight for even a second. Yet they just roll up their sleeve and inject something that nobody knows what's in there. I mean, the number of parents who have read that insert or know exactly what's in this vaccine. So it's like we're so careful for this precious cargo, our babies, until the medical comes around and just goes, hey, we're gonna jab something into their bloodstream. Okay. I mean, just do it.
Hey, now, I'm not going to hate on people that have leashes on their children. Look, my son is wild.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
And look, will we take him out in public, which he's five now, so he's not so bad. But when he was younger, in a split second, he would be gone. So he had this little monkey book bag. And it had a tether to it. Yeah. And you know, you call it a tether or a leash, whatever it is, it's the same thing, but it kept him from running off. So I'm not going to hate on anybody that has a leash on their kid.
So you're not doing it.
Because I'm there.
You're not doing it the right way. The medical estate, all you got to do is go to the doctor and say, I've got a child that sometimes gets energetic and runs, and they've got prescriptions that will dull your child down to an obedient just drone if you need it. They'll put him on an antidepressant or a psychotropic or something to take that spirit out of him.
Yeah, my son, you know, clinically, you know, I don't care, so I've never taken him to get clinically, a doctor to look at him or anything for this. But no doubt in my mind, my child is ADHD. That kid can't sit still, and so we had last night. He had his children's choir at church gave their concert for the year last night. And literally, he was the only child on the stage the entire time, jumping around, dancing, twirling around. All the other kids up there, nicely, yes, singing, and still, and doing their hand motions. All the entire time, the kids danced around, jumping around, moving around. And, you know, of course, his teachers are, hey, you know, kid, you know, settle down. You know, but he didn't care. I didn't care either, you know. So
it's called being a kid. I know so many kids in my elementary school, before they pronounced ADHD and ADD some kind of a handicap or a condition, it was called, man, that kid's hyper. One of the most hyper kids I went to school with ended up being a 30-year colonel in the Air Force. I mean, the guy just crushed life. He was just completely energetic. And there were several of those kinds of kids. I had certainly tendencies towards that and probably still do to a degree with my mind. I think we're over-medicating these kids and over-diagnosing things that are just different energy levels. On the COVID stuff, this was also interesting to me this morning, because I want to get to the Tate Reeves stuff. The vaccine infomercial that goes by the name of the Today Show each morning on NBC was looking at the southern states. They dared to ask the question. They're saying, we're looking at the case counts that are going up in the Northeast. And it was like all of New England and the Northeast and Michigan, while the case counts are going down in the South. And they were seeking to explain this to people because I think they're starting to catch on. Uh-oh, I think people are noticing this, you know, where there's no restrictions, cases are going down. Where there's endless restrictions, they're actually going up. We need to explain this. Get out there and tell people why. They blamed it on the testing this morning. Now, there may be a case that Arkansas is doing less testing than New Jersey. But does that really matter in the grand scheme of it? Wouldn't Arkansas hospitals, wouldn't the illnesses, wouldn't the medical system be under strain? Tests to identify a case mean basically nothing. It manifests itself in true illness, which would show up in the hospitals. But it was strange they didn't talk about that. They seemed to brush it away by the idea that the testing is being done more in the Northeast than it is here.
Yeah, wasn't that Texas you played a clip from when Texas lifted their restrictions about the same time that Tate Reeves did here? There was a lady that you played a clip, and she said that they were going to start stacking up bodies like firewood. Right. And yeah, here we are a couple of weeks in, and they're doing great, and the hospitals are not overrun. And
maybe the test is what's making people sick and forcing them to go to the hospital. Maybe they're saying, you know, I thought I was fine until I tested for COVID, and suddenly I needed to be admitted to the hospital. I certainly took a dive. So anyway, this thing it gets more and more transparent, and so it's funny to me to watch the media try to figure out how to explain these things away. You know, Fauci said a couple of days ago he didn't see another surge coming. Today he says he does see another surge coming. These things continue to go on. Tate Reeves the other day said, I think my reading of him, and I don't know him like y'all do in your interactions with the state government here, but he said something along the lines of, I'm not going to be bullied by people in other parts of the country. We're not going to impose restrictions here just because they have case rises in other parts of the country. I think it kind of felt like he thought that was a bold statement, which to me was just a big duh. But the thing I didn't like about that, even though I can appreciate he's not bending a knee, I don't think politically he could, but was there ever a time in Mississippi where he was justified in the mask mandates or telling private businesses they can only do 25% of their occupancy? I mean, with everything we know about South Carolina, what we know about Florida, what we know about Sweden, it felt to me like Tate Reeves was saying he's still data dependent. And if the cases start going up, he may have to pull these tools out. But right now our cases are trending down, so it's not. Did he ever have a justification for what he did?
Yeah, I think you're right. South Dakota the entire time stayed open.
Yes.
And never had a surge.
Never.
So I think that, you know, certainly looking back, you know, hindsight's 2020, right? And so hindsight is, so, I mean, we can look back now and say that, yeah, maybe we should have never done this. Look, South Dakota, they didn't do it, and we should have followed along with that as well.
But it doesn't seem that's resonating with Tate Reeves and Thomas Dobbs to look at that and say, oh, wow, you know, we did all these things. We hurt a lot of people. And look, I'll give them credit. Maybe they thought they were helping people. Maybe they, you know, maybe Thomas Dobbs has the purest heart in the world and he thought he was saving lives. But, you know, you say hindsight's 20/20, you kind of have to use the hindsight. And it doesn't seem like they have any awareness of hindsight in comparisons in this case, which seems very obvious to me. So one of us seems to be wrong, me or Tate or Thomas.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, again, look, The virus is real. People died from the virus, but the numbers, you know, don't justify the shutdowns and the hurt that the economy has now had. That will be, you know, I mean, we're looking at not only in Mississippi, but nationally, our economy is coming crashing down. And I know you're talking about the Fed earlier. Like, I mean, they have pumped so much money into it. I don't know if you saw Thomas Massey, you know, posted the other day that 25% of the debt that we've incurred since 1776 as a country has come within the last 12 months.
Holy cow.
So 25% of our debt that we've ever incurred as a country since our founding came in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
And that's just the Fed pumping more and more money into it. And so if you don't think inflation's going to, you know, just completely devalue the dollar, then, you know,
yeah,
keep that cash in your mattress, and you know I'm looking at cryptocurrency. I know we've talked about that before, but I'm a big advocate of cryptocurrency. So.
All right, well, I've got a story about that too. We'll get to. Did you see what Peter Thiel said?
No.
Peter Thiel came out yesterday on a panel with Mike Pompeo, the neocon warmongering guy jockeying to get Republicans to fall in love with him because he was loyal to Trump. P- Peter Thiel said, there's a possibility, a strong possibility, that cryptocurrencies are a tool of the Chinese to destroy America.
Of course.
Yeah. This is, they're going to drag cryptocurrencies into something. All right. We're going to take a break. I want to come back. I want you to listen to, before we start getting into state stuff next hour, I want you to listen to Elizabeth Warren did a presser about student loan forgiveness and these kinds of things. I found it pretty fascinating. And some glaring problems with what she said. So we're talking to Americans for Prosperity. We're going to play this Elizabeth Warren clip in the next hour. We'll get into some state stuff here.
Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here with Stephen Utroska and Cade Yates from Americans for Prosperity. I wanted to play this this clip from Elizabeth Warren here. She is talking about student loan forgiveness. She's asked about this, and I'm not sure who the reporter was that might have asked her an actual question here, but I'm going to play what she has to say and then see if you come to the same conclusion of just a glaring inconsistency with what she has to say here. And get her clip pulled up here.
Leave any part out, you can remind me. But on the 15%, many of these are higher income. Someone who's a plastic surgeon, for example.
So first of all, she does this, there's going to be an income level where they get rid of student loans. But if you did real well in school and then became successful, then you still got to pay yours. So this is her first class warfare thing, but it gets worse.
Example, may have taken out a lot of student loan debt, but has a lot of capacity to repay the student loan debt. For those who don't, going through bankruptcy and changing the rules in the Department of Education so that they can cancel student loan debt as part of the bankruptcy process if they show that they are otherwise unable to pay, permits a more handcrafted approach for the smaller number of people who have very high debt loads and very low incomes.
Okay, first on that, I think I kind of agree with that. I mean, I thought it's always been bad that student loans, because it's another government exception, they always get these exceptions. You can't bankrupt out of taxes, but you can screw every private business in the country if you owe them money. I feel like student loans should be included in bankruptcy. It shouldn't be carved out for anything. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think if you take out a loan, you should pay it back.
Right, exactly.
So to bankrupt out of it, I kind of agree that you have to. But the issue with student loans is no private bank in the world would give an 18-year-old kid $100,000 for anything else.
Right, and particularly if they could bankrupt out of it.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
why so many of them get the loans now, is because it's guaranteed. They will hunt you to the end of the earth. They will garnish your wages. So there's no free market in that. If there was a chance, they would look at somebody and go, we don't think this guy's going to be successful in college. We're never getting our money back, and the loans wouldn't happen.
That's right. And that's how it should be.
Right.
That's how it should be.
Okay.
Me as an engineer, there was probably, I got scholarships to go, but there would have been plenty of banks who would have looked at me, how well I did in high school, probably looked at my parents. If they would have co-signed on it, said, okay, yes, parents, have good credit,
right,
all this and that. Yeah, we'll let them take out a loan for engineering school because chances are we'll get paid back for it.
Right.
But if you're going to underwater basket weaving and you get out with a four-year degree and $100,000 worth of student loans, you'll never pay it back. And that's who she's wanting to give it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, all right. Well, this is it gets worse. This is the really bad part to me.
On the question about people who've already paid off their student loan debt, my answer is this is good for you. Student loan debt is holding back our economy. Our economy would do better if all of the people who have student loan debt were able to get out and start their own small businesses, able to buy homes, able to take jobs in public service, things that are denied to them when they're struggling with a load of debt.
Okay. She's not wrong at that. Now, I'm not supporting the fact that the government just waves a magic wand and gets rid of them. But can we not take her logic and say the government should pay off everybody's mortgage? I mean, all of these Americans out there struggling to make mortgage payments. What about car payments? I mean, all the people saddled with car payments right now. Do you know how good that would be for all of us if nobody had any debt? The credit cards? Wipe it away. Because obviously it would be good for the economy. I mean, this is am I wrong? Is that not the logic? Just why is student loan debt any different than any other debt someone takes on?
Yeah, well, exactly. The issue with her logic is that we'll have to take a $1 trillion loan out to pay for those.
Right. Yeah.
And as we
it's
add
just transferring
more,
the debt.
Yeah, as we add more debt, the people who are paying that back through their taxes,
exactly,
that's going to negatively affect the economy, because then why be successful?
Right. Basically, the only way this really works is if you go to all of the colleges who loan, you know, who provided services to these things and somehow clawed the money back from them. You know what I mean? Because you're right. You're just taking the student loan debt from the balance sheet of the student and putting it on the balance sheet of all taxpayers. Yeah. So it's not really a repudiation of debt. But I think it's just a very interesting argument to go, oh, come on, we'll unleash the economy if we get them out from underneath all that debt. But yeah. I mean, think of all the businesses that have got debt. Imagine the expansion and the hiring they could do if they didn't have to pay off that building that they bought. Exactly. I mean, they could hire more people.
Well, and honestly, the biggest thing that I've seen are people say, well, if we forgive student loans, we might as well forgive medical debt.
Medical debt is huge.
Cancer patients.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who are like, I suffered through this majorly. And so for me, it's a slippery slope, and we will never be able to recover from, you know, again, $1 trillion being pulled out to pay for, you know, unused degrees that just haven't been used widely.
Well, you say we're never going to recover, but I really think that's 2019 thinking. $1 trillion's not a lot of money anymore. It was a lot of money 12 months ago. $1 trillion today is like a month's worth of spending.
What's another trillion?
You know, yeah, I mean, you know,
it's not, you know, we're too big to fail, right?
Right. It's not like it's a quadrillion, Cade. It's not real money. It's just $1 trillion. What is it? 1.5. I guess if you don't pay off Richie Rich's, you know, the people that got a usable degree and then succeeded with it, they don't get any help. It's the people that just flailed around in college and wasted their time, they get it paid off.
Maybe that's the idea. Look, if we have hyperinflation, right? So I've talked about this before. I've got a hyperinflation, a collection of currencies from around the world, and I've got one from 1946 Hungary, and I've got a $5 quintillion bill, right? So if we have hyperinflation so high, and we're passing out $5 quintillion bills, then what? You know, what's $30 trillion?
Right.
Well, we pay that off quick, right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we're all going to be millionaires. I would say in the next, how long is it going to take? 10 years, maybe 20 years? You know, every American's going to be, being a millionaire is going to mean nothing, because everyone's going to be a millionaire, because you're going to have those kinds of currencies out there. Yeah. Anyway, this is Elizabeth Warren. Spoiler alert on this clip. The reporter did not ask her any of these questions or did not discuss any of these things. They just let her get away with talking about how great for the economy this would be, how people don't need to hate on the people who had – I mean, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. As bad as I feel for the people who took out all these student loans, because they were basically hoodwinked into them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they should be mad at Elizabeth Warren and this political class for encouraging a system that saddled them with this debt, not looking to the same political class to bail them out by covering it all with other taxpayer money.
Yeah.
And I feel punish bad. The people that have paid off their student loans
exactly.
already.
Exactly.
And the hardworking class that never went to college that didn't pull out those
exactly.
loans.
All right, we got to run. We'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much. You tell me that you love me so.
All right, we're are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We got Cade Yates and Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity Inn. They'll kind of update us on things that are going on in the state. I wanted to bring up a couple of things. I think, Stephen, we've talked a lot about the legislature. One of the things that you and I have talked about a lot, and I'm watching a lot of states really kind of drawing lines in the sand, and I don't see that particular imagination in Mississippi, so I'd like to get your take on a couple of these things. New York state lawmakers on Friday approved a bill that would significantly strip embattled Governor Andrew Cuomo of his temporary emergency powers that was granted during the last year with COVID. When Kentucky lawmakers returned to Frankfort this month, they immediately moved to reduce Democratic Governor Andy Beshear's power to respond to disasters and disease outbreaks. The Republicans, who control the state's legislature, want emergency orders to end after 30 days unless the General Assembly votes to extend them and to limit the governor's ability to close businesses and schools this year. They argue Beshear has been trampling on individual rights in the efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Quote, I believe the governor has abused his executive powers and believe a bill like this will ensure that this doesn't happen again. This was Republican State Senator Matt Castlin. That's in Kentucky. Now, of course, this is easy for a Republican to do because the governor is Democratic. But there are states moving across the country to strip some of these emergency powers from governors. Was there any movement in our legislature, even any individual members that thought that we had gone a little insane and that Tate Reeves or whoever follows him has too much power to regulate businesses? It's just a whim.
I didn't hear that conversation a single time during our legislature. But like you said, I think a lot of that is it's very easy for Republicans,
right,
you know, to come out just like we've seen, you know, nationally now, you know, in D.C. All of a sudden, all the Republicans up there are good conservative, you know, fiscal conservatives who, you know, hate the spending. They all voted against the new, you know, stimulus package, although they voted for, you know, the three of them last year, the $6 trillion worth last year. Now they're completely against this one under Biden. So I think that's the same thing. It's all you and I continue to talk about, I think, every week for the last month when I've come on Thursdays. We've talked about the theatrics.
Yeah.
I think that's all part of it. You know, you're not going to see in a red state a Republican legislature come out against a Republican government. I mean, a governor. For something like that, for executive power. I just don't think it's going to happen.
And Tate Reeves is not somebody who would say the executive branch here has too much power. He's not going to give up any of that willingly or anything. I mean, this just seems like an issue that is so at the heart of what Republicans and conservatives want right now that you would think in red states. The gun issue. I've got things on the gun issue. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey signed legislation Tuesday to bar in-state enforcement of any federal firearms laws which violate the Second Amendment. Iowa's Governor Kim Reynolds, Republican, joined the increasing number of Republican governors on Wednesday who have voiced their opposition to vaccine passports in the United States. I mean, this is a lot of, and it's Republicans to their credit across the board, a lot of people trying to protect their citizens from all of these new laws, emergency powers, executive. I think Biden is passing an executive order today on gun control stuff. No protection from our legislature here or our governor here.
Well, we couldn't even get in our own legislature a supermajority Republican in both chambers, House and Senate. We couldn't even get a bill. It was basically just a statement. It's a House resolution. It basically just makes a statement. It's no code, no state law. It doesn't actually do anything. But it just said, hey, us as a state, we will protect our citizens and their rights that are outlined in the Bill of Rights of the U.S. Constitution. So if the feds come down on us and try to enforce things that are against our U.S. Constitution's Bill of Rights, we will protect our citizens, right? Who would not support that?
Yeah.
You know, who would not support, especially in a supermajority Republican House and Senate, who would not support that? Couldn't even get it out. Couldn't get it out. Didn't make it out of the House. Was introduced in the House. Couldn't make it out of the House.
Well, I would think particularly on the gun issue, that would probably be the first one I would think. Vaccine passports, we're a pretty bad vaccine state. But I would think on the gun issue, I was surprised you got through the whole legislature without with a Biden in president. Again, they can do the theatrics. That's popular politics in Mississippi to be a Republican representative of any, probably any part of Mississippi outside of maybe some Delta counties. to come out against Biden's overreach against guns, and nobody introduced anything along those lines?
Yeah, so there's actually a bill that came out that would have basically, I mean, it's already in law that says if you have the enhanced carry concealed carry permit, that you can take onto any state property. You can do that now, and there's very few restrictions if you have the enhanced carry. But this basically, this law would have just even further, you know, made that known that places like on college campuses where they still restrict your ability to carry, even though it's against the law, there was a bill that came out that would have even further enforced them to be able to, or them to allow you to do that, wouldn't come out. They couldn't get it. They couldn't get it brought out. The House, it was introduced in the House, and they couldn't even get a vote on it to say we're going to protect your rights as a Mississippi citizen based on current law that we already have in Mississippi.
Right.
You know, there's no law that basically would come out and enforce those, require universities to enforce those, and our Institute of Higher Learning came out against that.
And this is, again, this is, you know, because it's this Republican majority, this is Republicans stopping it. This isn't, it's just not something you can blame on some Democrat resistance and we just need to get rid of more Democrats. I mean, this is the Republican Party that's stopping any of these things from happening, including Delbert Hoseman coming out against getting rid of the individual income tax.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I will say on that, I mean, I think you're hitting the larger issue on the head, the nail on the head with all of these issues are going to be taken on the state level. Like if we're going to fight these issues, we're going to have to fight them on the state level. And we need the legislators that will stand up and say, I'm for the Constitution. I'm for the individual liberties of Mississippians. And I'm not going to let the feds come in and take away those individual liberties, whether that's like we mentioned taxes, we mentioned guns, we mentioned anything. I mean, the federal level is about to explode in overreach of power, overreach of spending. And it's going to be messy, and the only way we can stop it is by reducing the tentacles that have wrapped around us through federal spending, especially through Medicaid expansion and some other pieces. You have to cut those ties. You have to be able to say Mississippi's in a superior state that's going to release ourselves from this federal control, and we're going to take care of our own. And so hopefully that's what we can do is, you know, grow in Mississippi and become an independent state.
Well, I think you hit on one of the most important issues of the whole thing, and I think you're exactly right. We are too beholden to the Federal Reserve. I mean, it is like a child who's depending on their parents for allowance. Pretty difficult to go against mom and dad if you got a date on Saturday night and the only way you're getting to hook up with this girl is if they give you that $20. I mean, you know, we've got to get, but we're so far away from that goal, aren't we? I mean, we're not even making moves towards ending our federal. They didn't vote for Medicaid expansion, so that's good. So it doesn't make it worse, but have we done anything to make it better and be more self-sustaining?
Well, on that point specifically, I do want to say we had two amendments that came out on the Senate floor this year for Medicaid expansion, one a partial expansion, one a full expansion, and both of those amendments were voted down exactly on party line votes. So, of course, we killed it because Republicans in the Senate, you know, voted against it, and all Democrats voted for it, all Republicans voted against it. That only happened this year, party line voting, because Delbert Hoseman was not pushing this. This was an initiative led by Democrats this year. Next year may be a different story. Delbert Hoseman has already come out and said he supports Medicaid expansion, you know, that he wants that, and that will be a third-year issue, which is next legislative session, 2022. We'll see that, and Delbert Hoseman will push it, and then we'll see what the Republicans do. We'll see if the Republicans actually hold to their party line vote next year.
It's been very interesting to do these shows with you over the past few months. I dislike Delbert Hoseman a little bit more every week. I mean, it's been pretty amazing, really, from me being pretty clueless about who he was, you know, going into probably last year, and then seeing his opposition to the medical marijuana bill and trying to put his cronyism on that. That certainly soured me. Then I saw him waving his bony finger of indignation at everybody around COVID and masking and stuff, which just is a big turnoff to me. And then week by week by week, I realize he is behind some of the things that are some of the worst self-checks Mississippi is involved in.
Yeah, that's right. And like Cade said, I think Mississippi, I love Mississippi, born and raised here. I'm a fourth generation Mississippian. You know, my family has strong ties to Mississippi. I'll never leave the state. You know, unless I'm forced to, by something outside of my own doing. But I got to be real. You know, Mississippi is not, you know, just the bastion of destination states for people to want to move here. So what do we do? How do we get people into Mississippi? To get people to Mississippi, we have to make it more free than anywhere else. People have to want to come here. It will be a destination state for freedom.
Yeah.
That's why people will move here. So why don't we be a sandbox of regulations where, you know, we reduce regulations on businesses, allow people to come here. You look at worldwide, people love doing business in the Caymans because of their, you know, their banking. People love doing business in Switzerland because of their, you know, openness to businesses. Why
right.
can't we be something like that? Let people want to move here to Mississippi. You know, Hong Kong, same way. Look, you know, China basically gave Hong Kong, you know, almost freedom in doing anything, yeah. you know, as a capitalist nation.
And they used it.
Why? Because China, as a communist government, you know, they look at the, you know, if you look at the Soviet Union, they couldn't last as a standalone, you know, communist regime because they have to have somebody producing something.
Right.
So China knew that, and they said, well, let's let Hong Kong over here do its thing. We'll basically just siphon money off of their free market, you know, their capitalist system to keep us propped up. And that's exactly what they did. So if we could do that here in Mississippi, actually give people back the liberty and freedoms to do their own thing, let them work apart from the government, that's how Mississippi can actually, you know, become a destination where people want to move here and do business here.
Well, it seems across the board to me, I don't care if it is the city of Jackson, which I know is low voter turnout in this stuff, but they just overwhelmingly just reaffirmed, you know, Chukwe Lumumba. And it's just pretty fascinating to me to see within a few weeks of the capital city that he's in charge of not having running water for a month, he just cakewalks back into office. I mean, that is pretty – and, you know, you can't lay that all on him. This is a problem of decades and decades. But you feel like if you're going to be accountable for anything, you know – a sex scandal is one thing you can get run out of, but not providing running water to your citizens for a month in 2021 is not a disqualifier. Pretty surprising to me. But the bottom line is I see with the city of Jackson, the state of Mississippi, a complete lack of imagination. We are so vanilla. We are so entrenched. It's got this system that just continues to perpetuate the problems that we have. Now, you've shown us some bright spots in this legislature, some freedom things, but just overarching, there doesn't seem to be, I don't get any big, bold ideas from Tate Reeves. I mean, you know, they may really focus in on another tire manufacturer. And so, like, all the energy goes to, ooh, we really want to get another tire plant in Saltillo. And then they take a bunch of credit and do a bunch of stuff. But the kinds of things that would attract the 10,000 other small businesses that would be more impactful than just the new tire plant, it just doesn't seem like there's any appetite for doing anything interesting here.
Yeah.
No, and that's the problem is I think Mississippi has a huge problem with wanting to get those big fish, those,
right.
you know, going out fishing and trying to catch that 25-pound, you know, catfish out there in the res.
Something you can get a picture turning a shovel on, you know, that's good for your campaign. Yeah. But
but the problem is right now back at home, we don't have substance. We don't have food. We need to be out there fishing for our livelihood. We need to be going after medium size and small size businesses and going, listen, we want to open ourselves up and be a bastion of freedom for you to come here and escape those states that have shut down your business, that have completely wrecked your overall, the way you spend money and the way you're taxed. And so we must be a state that can open up and be a place where people flood in. And again, you know, we can't change the weather. We can't change certain things about us, but there are always ideals and cultural things about Mississippi that make us one of the best places to live in the world.
Right. I agree with that. And to your point, too, Mississippi doesn't have the greatest reputation. It is not deserved. I mean, we get a lot of bashing, but thank God for Alabama and West Virginia. We're not always the butt of a joke. But it's like we have to do more. You know, I think we have to overcome something. We don't have beautiful mountains here. We don't have skiing. We've got a coast that offers something. We've got, you know, good weather year-round. We don't suffer anything really horrific except for July and August here. But, you know, it's like we need to go over and above. We don't have New Orleans, so we don't have that. We don't have the beaches of Florida, so we need to become more free than that. It's like we need to really kind of leapfrog over people ideologically to attract people here. But there just doesn't seem to be any imagination for that.
We do have medical marijuana now, though.
That we are. And that is the funny thing, and I'm glad you bring that up, because what, we're the 33rd state, I think, to get medical marijuana, and we still tried to screw that up. And again, Dilbert Hoseman was the guy in charge of, you know, trying to screw that up for us. But yeah, I mean, we were 33rd and still tried to pull away from it. Dilbert would rather have us be 50th or never. But anyway, all right, we got to take a break. We'll come back and maybe I'll let you tell us the better sides of Mississippi these days.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we're here with Americans for Prosperity, Cade Yates, Stephen Utroska. All right, so we've got kind of a short segment here. I don't mean to say it this way, but since we've only got a short segment, give us the bright side.
Yeah, we'll talk about the good side. Yeah, we can do that quick. So we did in the legislative session. You know, we talked last week, last Thursday. Actually, when I came on the show last Thursday, that was the last day of session. They came in, you know, just formalities, talked a couple things, and then they both, you know, everybody went home. They concluded last Thursday. We Americans for Prosperity, we engaged on 46 bills this year. About 15 of those were opposed bills, which included the Medicaid expansion, the crony medical marijuana bill, gas tax, plenty of other tax and spendings, the $300 million bond bill. And so out of the 15 that we opposed, we were successful in killing 14 out of those 15.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
And so we did a pretty good job at that. The one that got through, that got passed, which we knew it would, we came out against it and it didn't matter, was the bond bill. You know, we're $800 million over, you know, we got $800 million surplus, but that doesn't stop us from taking out $300 million in loans this year, right?
That is amazing.
So, you know, we got those mostly for roundabouts, is the joke I like to use, you know, road projects, special pet projects, things like that's with the bond bill. So it came through, but outside of that, we had had about 30 other bills that we supported that we engaged in, and we actually got about 20 of those through, and so good bills, you know, giving us universal licensing for professionals. We've talked about on the show before that makes it easier for people who want to come to Mississippi and actually work for a living, an easier process to do that. We had the income tax bill. It's funny you mentioned, thank God for West Virginia. We actually have a West Virginia AFP chapter there. And so because our states are so similar, the West Virginia state director and I talked back and forth a good bit. And they this year also introduced an income tax elimination bill. And so when our bill came out, when the speaker introduced our bill, and I have been very open of saying, you know, I applaud the speaker for bringing out his tax elimination bill, but we wanted to make some amendments to it because it wasn't the greatest. And I haven't said this on the air yet, but one of our national policy folks actually told me when they originally first read the speaker's bill, said, this does eliminate income tax, but it's probably the worst income tax elimination bill I've ever seen. And then she called me back 2 weeks later and said, well, West Virginia just outdid you. So thank God for West Virginia, right? So they came out with the income tax elimination bill that apparently
worse than ours.
So, but yeah, so that died. We are doing a lot of work on the off session right now on the income tax elimination bill. We've got some really big things that we're looking at coming out with soon, probably within the next month, some things we're going to do over the summer to try to continue to move that narrative for income tax elimination in Mississippi. But we also, the speaker and his staff kind of approached me on the last day of the session called me in the hallways and said, hey, look, we really want to work with you guys over the off session to work on a good bill next year. We've got the momentum to do it. We want to work on a bill that you guys can fully stand behind and support. We know you want to make some amendments to our bill. So, again, I applaud the speaker and his staff that they want this done and want to make sure that they get our support. And, certainly the grassroots of Mississippi, we're a grassroots organization. And so we our power come from the people. We are a, I like to talk, I'm not afraid of the word lobbyist. I'm a lobbyist, but I'm a public interest lobbyist. I'm up there at the Capitol working for the people of Mississippi in protecting their freedoms and liberty, where most of the lobbyists up there for special interests who don't care about your freedom or liberty, as right. long as the companies or the special interests they represent are getting, their piece of the pie. They don't care if they cut you out or not. So, we will continue to work and make sure that next year we have a good bill that comes out, and we will push very hard on it next year to hope that we can eliminate income tax. And like I said, we'll have a big initiative coming out, around midsummer, to help push that narrative in the public eye, to make sure we get support for that too. But we're certainly looking forward to next session already.
Yeah, it's frustrating to watch laws that a lot of people are really for, but then a couple of interests, get a hold of some politicians and most people aren't paying attention and these things die. And I don't know how you do it. I'm an impatient person to think that, well, maybe next year or the year after, or we didn't get it then. Maybe if we elect more of this or more of that, this constant thing of maybe down the road, particularly with the legislature, because they stop, with Congress nationally, there's always a possibility they bring something up next month if they fail. But with this, to have to wait another year to get rid of income taxes is a little frustrating. But I think we need to do something just in case the new state flag doesn't really set the state on fire. I mean, I think a lot of people think that's really all we needed to do was just change the flag. I'd say let's just hedge our bets and maybe get rid of income taxes too.
Yeah, with a supermajority of Republicans, again, you would think that we could get tax and spending under control, right?
Because
we're all fiscal conservatives. But for something as simple as the income tax elimination, and I say simple, the concept is simple. To hey, let's start allowing people to keep more money in their own pockets. That's a good thing, right?
That's Elizabeth Warren just told us so.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's a long play. A lot of what we do in the legislature, in the Capitol, is unfortunately a long play. And so even the universal licensing bill, that was a 2-year play that started out last year with a bill that basically gave military families universal licensing. So as they moved here for either the military member himself or his family, a spouse or children, if they moved here because of his military bringing him to one of the bases in Mississippi, we thought, hey, it would be great to allow his family members to work here in Mississippi if they have to move here. So why don't we make that process easier for them? The Department of Defense came out and highlighted our bill that we did here in Mississippi and basically made that a standard for all states to pass because the Department of Defense was behind it for their military members. So then we last year passed that. Everybody got behind it, saw it being a good thing, and then it was an easy transition this year to say, hey, well, if this is such a great thing for military family members, why wouldn't it be a great thing to bring everybody to Mississippi? So we rolled that over, and that was our play with that, and it worked great. And everybody realized now it's a good idea, and we should have done this originally.
Which, and I'd say just to kind of plug all of that together with AFP, next week we're having a Taco Tuesday. And if you go to our Facebook page, you can actually go to the link and you can learn more about all of these bills and the depth of what's going on. Because, like you said, 46 bills. We can't cover them all on air. So if you want to come join us next week, that'll be a great opportunity to learn more about that and what we're going to do next year. So, like I said, go to our Facebook page. You can find the link and everything. And like I said, wanted to throw that in there so we can kind of get people involved, because we will not be able to do any of this that we're talking about without people being involved and without having Mississippians behind us.
And really what y'all are doing, what I think is kind of interesting, kind of particularly the way you lay out that you getting military spouses first and then getting this recognition of credentials to everybody. We see a lot of kind of creeping socialism, particularly in the conservative crowd like we're talking to now. we see a lot of these kids kind of creeping into our schools the wrong direction. It's nice to see capitalism kind of creeping in. You know, it may take a little while, but if we're taking a slow, steady slide toward capitalism, that is something very different than what we see in a lot of areas.
Yeah, yeah. And I appreciate Kate's pitch for our, you know, he's our grassroots engagement director, so he's much better about remembering to pitch our, hey, we're having Taco Tuesday next week. I forget to do that sometimes. But yeah, always follow us on Facebook, AFPMS. The at sign if you search for it, or Americans for Prosperity - Mississippi. But
yeah, all right, well, good. Well, we'll talk about that event more. I know I'll be there. So we're talking to Stephen Utroska, Cade Yates from Americans for Prosperity. There's a bill on the governor's desk we want to talk about when we come back. Stay with us.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a Complete Flag Source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a Complete Flag Source has all of the right brackets. Visit a Complete Flag Source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We have Stephen Utroska and Cade Yates in from Americans for Prosperity. There is a bill on the governor's desk right now that I think this is an area that conservatives need a little bit of self-reflection and some education on, because there's a knee-jerk, I believe there is a knee-jerk bad reaction when you say criminal justice reform. I think conservatives get a couple of things. I think they got taken down a couple of paths they shouldn't have. Number one was the wars. I give Donald Trump a great deal of credit to waking up a lot of conservatives that the wars were bad. But there, it almost seems like there's been a machismo around the idea that if America fights a war, we can kick anybody's butt, and so people supported him. I think they found the folly of that. There's another thing in the conservative world, which is if anybody commits a crime, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. We want to stack them like cordwood, build more prisons, that this would somehow work. We are the most incarcerated country in the planet Earth, China being the asterisk to that because they just kill people. But it's not working. I mean, you know, it's just not worked. And I think conservatives hopefully can retreat on criminal justice reform kind of the same way, using logic and instead of just emotion, in looking at this idea of just institutionally housing people for breaking random laws made by these politicians that none of us respect, but we just assume that if they say something's illegal, that someone should go to jail for breaking it. Anyway, I could keep talking about that. I will not. There's a bill on Tate Reeves' desk, a criminal justice reform. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah. So, and to include, not only are we the most incarcerated country in the world, Mississippi is the second highest incarceration rate in the country.
Yeah. And as they say, how's that working out for us?
Yeah. How's that working out for us? We have 19,000 people incarcerated in Mississippi. This bill in particular that's on his desk is a parole reform bill. So it would basically streamline parole and allow some people who do not currently have the option of parole, it will give them the option of parole. So look, we got a new commissioner of corrections, Burl Kane, in 2 years ago, and he's been doing great things. And everybody, you know, conservatives love Burl Kane. He came from Louisiana. He, you know, was at Angola for 20 years, and you know, everybody sees Angola in the South, at least, as being kind of, you know, almost the leader in, you know, actually rehabilitating people. That's what
I didn't really know that, but is that true?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, you know, the correction system, right? It's called the correction system. So what are we correcting? You know, we're trying to rehabilitate these people who have, you know, lived this, you know, seemingly life of crime, and trying to rehabilitate them into productive members of society, right? And so if they have done that, if they have gotten to the point to where they have been rehabilitated, to where they are no longer looking towards a life of crime and want to get back out in society and be a productive member of society, that's why we have parole. So they have to go before a parole board that's appointed by the governor, by the way. So an all Republican appointed, parole board that we have right now, appointed by Tate Reeves.
So we're not talking, you know, there's examples around the country right now of DAs that are saying they're not going to prosecute any thefts under like what, $2,000? There have been some really wacky things that were just basically licenses to steal around the country. But that's not the case here in Mississippi.
Right, that's not the case.
Yeah.
So look, so what this bill would do would basically streamline parole. And Burl Cain has actually come out and said this is like the carrot, you know, to the stick. Like, if you want to ensure the inmate will act right and actually try to be productive members within the correction system, but also then translate that to being productive members of society, you have to have something to dangle in front of them.
Yeah.
And that's this parole bill. People who don't have option of parole, what do? They act up. They do whatever they want in prison because it doesn't matter. They're right. going to get released at a certain date, no matter how well they act in prison. But if you have this parole, you've got to go before a parole board. You know, what is the parole board looking for? They want to make sure that you've been, you know, you've been a good member within the correction system, that you've never had any issues, you've never gotten in fights, you never, you know, acted out against the guards, anything like that. They also like to see, hey, I've done training because, you know, I want, when I get out, I want to, you know, get a job. I want to be a productive member of society. So, you know, lots of programs within the prison allow for jobs training and things like that. So those type people are who the parole board look at for letting them out early than their full term. So if you want to get that carrot, you know, on a stick and dangle in front of them, what do? You give them the option of parole so that they will act good, learn skills, learn trades, and then when they get out, they don't have to go back to crime.
Right. I tell you one thing I see as a problem in this. You know, what happens is, I don't know the statistics, but probably every single day, multiple times a day, law-abiding gun owners around this country save their lives, protect other people with the use of firearms. We never hear about that, right? We only hear about when a gun is used in a shooting of five people or something like that. So there's all this that's not broadcast that is the good side of being able to protect yourself and our Second Amendment rights. Parole is kind of the same thing to me in the way that conservatives view it. You don't hear the endless stories of people who actually get parole, who didn't need to be in jail, wasting away in jail, and go back to providing for a family or raising their kids or anything like that. What you hear about on the news is that guy who just came out of parole and committed another crime.
That's right.
And I think that taints that, you know, in a direction that conservatives are vulnerable to thinking, look at that, another parolee commits a crime, and they ignore the 1,000 parolees that did not.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things that I have met with a lot of guys who are on parole, talk to them about them being in prison, the you know, their kind of experience of being in prison, and you'll hear a lot of guys who actually, when they come out, if they come out and have a trade that they learned in prison and they get away from the life of crime and they go back to, you know, being a productive member of society, a lot of those guys will tell you, hey, that's actually the best thing that's ever happened to me, is going to prison. So we're not against prison. You know, we're not against using our justice system for rehabilitation. That's what it's there for. You know, if you're a, you know, constitutionalist type conservative, you believe that the justice system is one of the essential branches of government. And so, you know, we need that system, but you have to have it in a way that actually is productive. If we're just throwing them in there, locking them up and throwing away the key, that's costing us a ton of money, to the tune of about $350 million a year in Mississippi, you know, $20,000 per head. You know, $20,000 per person per year is what it costs. So, look, we're in a world of overcriminalization. Everything is a felony.
Right.
I mean, we literally passed a bill last year that says if you transported a wild hog that was still alive, it's a felon. A felony. You could be a convicted felon.
No gun
for
rights,
transporting. Everything. If you transport a live hog, so you know, say you're a conservationist and you don't want to just kill a bunch of hogs, but you transport them over to, you know, your buddy's farm or whatever. I mean, literally, you become a felon, you know, a felon because of that. So, you know, there's lots of overcriminalization. That's another topic for another day. But
well, also, isn't there on that side of the lock them up and stack them like cordwood, isn't that a little bit of propaganda driven by people? There's a lot of money in incarcerating people, aren't there? Aren't there people who've got contracts doing that stuff? Law enforcement derives big budgets from enforcing endless laws. I mean, there. And so a lot of the people that the conservatives particularly kind of respect, which is law enforcement or, you know, people who talk about being law and order, they really kind of miss it. They've caught on to it with the military. You know, we finally are saying the words military industrial complex. And being a little more suspect of the people who come on Fox to tell us we need to invade this next country because we find out, oh, they sit on the board of directors of, you know, some defense contractor. I think a lot of the law and order people who resist criminal justice reform, it's because budgets are slashed or you know, revenue is not met because there is a prison industrial complex too.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one of the big things that, I'll tell people when I talk to them, especially conservatives that are the very hard on crime type people, and I grew up that way too. So, I mean, I come from that, you know, branch of conservatism.
Me too.
And so when I talk to them about it, if you'll ask any defense attorney you know, they'll tell you that guilty people do not go to trial. Guilty people always take the plea bargain because they know they're guilty, and if they go to trial – And you know, we're not talking about these national high-profile people. We're talking about local, you know, Mississippi people that did, you know, break an entering or something. They're going to take a plea bargain. Yeah. Number one, the prosecutors do not like to go to trial because they then have a chance of losing, and they hate losing. If they can get the person to take a plea bargain, then, you know, they don't have to go to trial. They don't have to put the work in to go to trial. They just take the plea bargain, you know, chalk that up as a win, you know, get the check mark for winning, and those people go and do their time. The people who end up with the longest sentences are the people who are either innocent or believe that they are innocent. And they said, no, I'm not taking a plea deal. I'm going to trial with this.
Try to fight the state.
Yeah, they try to fight it because they believe they're innocent. And then when they lose, you know, then the prosecutors throw the book at them. And what they do is, you know, especially if you're, you know, if you're someone that's got a public defender, and there are some great public defenders out there, but they have a caseload that maybe 40 cases on their desk, and so they can't put the time and effort into, right, you know, as a private attorney could. And so you have a public defender that's representing you. He doesn't have the time or effort to be able to put into your case. You lose, and then they throw the book at you. And then the prosecutors are going to use you as an example.
Right.
The next time they have a guy sitting there at the table and they throw him a plea bargain and he says, I'm not going to take it because I'm innocent. They're going to say, well, that's fine. Well, let me talk about this other guy that thought he was innocent. He's now sitting in prison for the rest of his life still thinking he's innocent.
Right.
You know, yeah. So they, you know, it's a racket.
Yeah, it is. And it's a shame, too, because, you know, we do want a functioning criminal justice system. There's no doubt about that. I want to be safe. I've got kids. There's a million reasons to want jails and police officers and all that stuff. But like everything else, human beings are in charge of it. There's too many interests involved in it, and it ends up being kind of corrupted. All right, got to take one more break. We'll come back and finish up with Americans for Prosperity. Stay with us.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment, talking to Cade Yates, Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. We're finishing up on criminal justice reform. We really could spend a lot of time on that because I think this is people need to be kind of educated on exactly what that is. Knee-jerk reaction is criminal justice reform, you're being soft on crime. That's not what it is. It's much more nuanced and deeper than that. You were talking off-air but wanted to address what prison should be and where we're kind of falling down in prisons in period.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is one of the biggest statistics I always push back on is I think it's like 85% of people that enter the prison system will eventually come out. So we have to find the way that we're going to have them come out the other side. If we have them come out the other side, chewed up, spit out, more trained in illegal activities coming out than they did coming in.
A bigger burden on society coming out than they were in. Yeah,
exactly. That's the failure on our system. And listen, our motto is smart on crime, soft on taxpayers. And for me and for a lot of individuals, we've seen time after time where it is better suited for individuals to go through drug court, a proven system that has produced really, really great success, and go through these options that don't just throw them in a cage and lock them up, throw away the key for 20, 30, 40 years and cost the taxpayers millions of dollars.
Which also, if you know addiction and things particularly around drugs, that trauma of locking them up, stripping them of their relationships, destroying their chances of a career actually is the kind of trauma that drives addiction, which when they come out, they fall into the old patterns because they're so wounded psychically that they go back on drugs. I mean, it's so counterproductive.
Exactly. Yeah,
there's the argument out there. People say all the time, you know, nobody's going to prison for life for a drug sentence. Let me tell you, based on our habitual offender laws in Mississippi, you know, third time, you know, basically three strikes and you're out. There's people who are sitting in prison for life sentences because they had a marijuana possession and it was their third offense.
Yeah.
There's about 70 individuals that are habitual offenders that are life for nonviolent offenses. And that's, I mean, $70 million a year on those individuals for nonviolent drug offenses. I mean, that's insane to me. I mean, we should be focusing on truly keeping our community safe and focusing on the individuals that are hurting people and individuals that are committing crimes against individuals and their wealth and their,
right,
you know, coming after your property.
Force and fraud.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, our tagline we like to use is, let's be smart on crime, but soft on taxpayers. We don't want to be soft on crime.
Right.
But let's be soft on taxpayers because we're the ones who have the burden to pay for these people to be in prison for life over a simple drug possession charge.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, there's so many things in America that we've so large groups of people, right and left, depending on the issue, have staked out this real emotional reaction to these things and just refuse to kind of dig down into it deeper. It's extremely conservative to want smaller government and more freedom for people, which necessitates having less laws, which creates less crimes, which means less. I mean, you know, if people would really kind of explore it in their minds rather than the hearts, we'd probably do a lot better. But anyway, so Tate Reeves set to sign that today. Is that right?
No, he's got he's actually got till the 22nd to sign it. So he's got a while. You know, he vetoed this same bill last year, but there was a lot of changes made to it. He put out, you know, kind of his guidelines last year, his veto message about why he vetoed it and what he would want to see in a bill. Every one of those have been addressed. The Prosecutors Association came out and put a list of demands into it themselves. And again, you know, the prosecutors are the ones who a lot of times are you know, the ones driving the reason we need criminal justice reform. But almost every one of their positions has been met in this bill. So, I mean, there's nobody, you know, from the very beginning for this bill this year that we have not addressed in this bill. And, again, I talked about last week, Daniel Sparks gave a great speech on the floor when this bill passed and ended up getting 35 out of, you know, 52 votes, overwhelming, you know, majority of it. And Republican support, so good bill. He should sign it.
And you can catch that on our Facebook page. It's on there.
Okay. So. One more time, tell your Facebook page. You got Taco Tuesday next Tuesday. I'll pump it on other shows, but go ahead real quick. We got about 10 seconds.
Yeah, America's Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook, and you can find everything there.
Okay, great. Appreciate it. People need to get involved with this group. They are fighting for freedom and prosperity here in Mississippi, and God knows we need it. Thanks, Cade. Thanks, Stephen. As far as for me, I'll see you tomorrow. Bye bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.